Sunday of January, right? And you know, there was this this couple, or rather the, you know, the old age home. There were two people who were staying in the old age home as part of their, you know, retirement life, retired life. And you know, a man, an old man, and an old lady, they met, and they liked each other. And the after you know, some time of courtship, and no, just good, no, giving trouble. I'll just try without this, right? Am I still visible? Audible? That's better. Okay, maybe we should try without. Yeah. So you know, this old gentleman and old lady, they met, and they liked each other. And so finally, after a long time, the old man picked up the courage to propose to her. And, you know, so he did propose to her. And then, of course, the evening came, and then the morning came. The morning came, and the old man was a little confused. So he went looking for this lady, and he went and met her, and he said, "My dear, I remember having proposed to you in the evening, but I don't know what your answer was." And the old lady promptly replied, "Thank God you asked me. I was wondering who I said yes to." You know, New Year resolutions are like that, right? New Year resolutions, you take the New Year resolutions on January 1st, and I don't know when you forget it, right? I know pastor keeps asking us, you know, what was your New Year promise card? What did it say? You know, we get the promise cards on January 1st. I'm sure many of us don't remember it, right? Even though pastor keeps asking us every morning, every day, every week to remember it, read it, and things like that. You know, so, but anyway, the month is still not over, so it is still good for us to think about the new beginning that, that January brings in, you know. So that's what I want to speak about today. You know, about our God, who is a God of new beginnings. We know that, right? We know that our God is a God of new beginnings. We must have heard multiple sermons on that, and things like that. So what I want to do is to try and refresh ourselves on this particular theme of God of new beginnings, and then focus on. You know, those of you who might have heard me speak would know that I never leave at God's attributes. I always focus it back onto what is our response. What should be our responsibility? What should we do as Christians, as members of the church? We'll just take a look at that. You know. So there are obviously many new beginnings in the Bible. So I'm going to focus on one concept, which is called the building the house of the Lord today. Right. And the reason for that is obvious. Those of you who have come here for the first time can see the number of empty chairs that we have here. Right? It is, you know, we are a sort of a struggling church. Maybe we should learn something from Dr. McAfee about church planting, right? And see how we can take it forward. And our attendance oscillates from anywhere between 3 to 30. Right? So that's the struggle that we go through in this church. So, and, you know, we have been going through some trials even as this year has begun. But I want us to look at, as members of this church, as members of this Bangalore Bible Fellowship, I want us to look at the God, who is the God of new beginnings, and what does He tell us about the future and about what needs to be done. So, obviously, there are a lot of new beginnings in the Bible, right? The Bible is full of that. Genesis is plenty of them. You know that we know them, starting with the creation, where you know, one of the pastors, those of you who know Pastor Vasu, he used to say that, you know, before creation, what was the triune God doing? What was God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit doing? And he says they were having a ball, you know, they were enjoying, they were having fun together, and then they decide, okay, let's create man in our image. And there comes the creation story, where the new beginning, the first beginning, where they where they create us in their image. Their image. Now, of course, we know that the fall happens later, and then the earth becomes a place far from the perfect place that God intended it to be. And sin increases, humanity forgets God very fast. You know? And then we see one man remaining faithful to God. That man is Noah. Right? And then God decides to bring another new beginning through this man. He destroys everything, the flood, but through this man who was faithful, God decides to give us another new beginning. God decides to give us, the human beings, yet another new beginning. You know. So, of course, this is just one of the countless times when God forgives us. God has forgiven mankind and given them a new beginning. Now, we see the history continuing. Despite God's swift judgment, despite God's anger, people continue turning to sin. People continue, moving back and rejecting God and disobeying God and moving back to sin, right? And then, but then again, we always see a few people who remain faithful to God. And Abraham was one of them, right? And then God obviously calls Abraham, and through Abraham provides us with yet another new beginning. He begins the whole story all over again. All over again. Calls him, and through him, through his faithfulness, he gives us yet another new beginning. Story continues, and then we come to the 400 years of slavery. And God once again intervenes, and through a very, very unwilling leader who says, God, who am I? What? I can't even speak. You want me to lead people? Are you joking? And through such a man, through a man who was so reluctant, God gives the mankind yet another new beginning through Exodus, through taking them out of slavery, and through taking them through the desert, and taking them to the promised land, and helping them, to settle down. Of course, further on into the history, we see, I'm sure all of us know this, right? Olden times, there used to be, in Hindi, there used to be this surf ad, Unkis kameez, meri kameez, safed kyon. Anyone remember? Andy must be remembering that, right? For those of you who don't know Hindi, it basically says, look, why is that person's shirt whiter than mine? It's an ad for a detergent, by the way, right? So, and this comparative nature is there in all human beings, right? And people start comparing, hey, look, the Ammonites have kings, the others have kings, why don't we have kings? The Israelites start asking God. And God keeps telling them, look, that's not a good idea. But people say, Lord, maybe it's not a good idea, but that's what we want. Right? So even despite the warnings that, look, having a king is not a good idea, people ask for a king, and Saul comes in, and then we see what happens, right? And then, of course, but God is again gracious. God is again gracious. Even after telling them that, not a good idea, but God gives in to them, and gives them the king Saul. But of course, it doesn't work out. But God, through David, gives Israelites yet another new beginning. Right? Yet another new beginning. Despite what the people wants. And then the history goes on, right? And then the exile happens. Kingdoms are broken up, people are taken away, and then come around 538 BC, the return of the exiles. And those of us who know the history know that it happens basically because of a lot of people who are involved. King Cyrus, whom Daniel served, King Xerxes, who was Esther's husband, King Artaxerxes, whom Nehemiah served, and a combination of all of them is when finally King Cyrus allows them to return, and they return. So this is yet another new beginning, the return of the exiles, right? And the story is in the book of Ezra, Haggai, Zechariah, and others, where they come, return, and then they restart, building the city up again, you know. Of course, we know that this happened because of to fulfill the prophecy of Isaiah, and we know that Daniel had a role to play here. We know that a lot of other people have worked on this. But what we're seeing here is God providing them with yet another opportunity to begin afresh. Yet another opportunity to begin afresh. So, that's God. God is a God of new beginnings. And of course, I haven't come to the New Testament yet, but we know that the New Testament is again in itself a new beginning, and there is. And so probably we'll touch upon it towards the end of the end of this message. So God is a God of new beginnings. He continues to give us chance. Second chance, third chance, million chance. Right. He continues to provide chances for us immaterial when we walk away from Him. He continues to give us. But let me turn the table around. How about us? How about us? What's our response to God's call for a new beginning? When God gives us an opportunity, when God gives us another new beginning, how do we respond? What's our response? God will give us new beginnings. God continues to give us this. How about us? What's our response to this benevolent act of God? I want to basically focus on this last one that I highlighted here, the return of the exiles, right? Return of the exiles. When they come in, we know. Let's turn to the Bible. Let's turn to the Bible and go to the book of Ezra. And I would like us to carefully read the whole chapter of Ezra 3. It's a short chapter. 13 verses. So let's read it carefully. Ezra chapter 3. When the seventh month came and the Israelites had settled in their towns, the people assembled as one man in Jerusalem. Then Jeshua, son of Josadak, and his fellow priests, and Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, and his associates began to build the altar of the God of Israel to sacrifice burnt offerings on it, in accordance with what is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. Despite their fear of the people around them, they built the altar on its foundation and sacrificed burnt offerings on it to the Lord, both in the morning and evening sacrifices. Then, in accordance with what is written, they celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles with the required number of burnt offerings prescribed for each day. After that, they presented the regular burnt offerings, the new moon sacrifices, and the sacrifices for all the appointed sacred feasts of the Lord, as well as those brought as freewill offerings to the Lord. On the first day of seventh month, they began to offer burnt offerings to the Lord, though the foundation of the Lord's temple had not yet been laid. Then they gave money to the masons and carpenters, and gave food and drink and oil to the people of Sidon and Tyre, so that they would bring cedar logs by sea from Lebanon to Joppa, as authorized by Cyrus, king of Persia. In the second month of the second year after their arrival at the house of God of Israel, God in Jerusalem, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, Jeshua, son of Josadak, and the rest of their brothers, the priests and the Levites, and all who had returned from captivity to Jerusalem, began the work, appointing Levites 20 years of age and older to supervise the building of the house of the Lord. Jeshua and his sons and brothers, and Kadmiel and his sons, descendants of Hodaviah, and the sons of Kenadad and their sons and brothers, all Levites, joined together in supervising those working on the house of the Lord, house of God. When the builders laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests in their vestments and their trumpets, and the Levites, the son of Asaph, with cymbals, took their places to praise the Lord as prescribed by David, king of Israel. With praise and thanksgiving, they sang to the Lord, "He is good. His love to Israel endures forever." And all the people gave a great shout of praise to the Lord, because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. But many of the older priests and Levites and family heads who had seen the former temple wept aloud when they saw the foundation of his temple being laid, while many others shouted for joy. No one could distinguish the sound of the shouts of joy from the sound of weeping, because the people made so much noise and the sound was heard far away. So this is a group of people that I want us to focus on this morning. What was their response to the new beginning that God gave them? God brought them back. What was their response? Their response was, let us go and build the house of the Lord. Let us go and build the house of the Lord. That was their response. Now, I wanted to think about the time and the return. You know, they're coming from Babylon, and calculations show that they will have to walk for almost about 4 months. 4 months to reach Jerusalem from where they were. Right? So they have been walking. They have been walking through the desert, you know, facing the dangers of the desert. And they come here to Jerusalem, and what's their first priority? To settle down, to build houses, their houses, to get a job for themselves, or to start a business for themselves, to create a livelihood for themselves, to have babies, to buy a car. They say our focus is on building the temple of God, building the house. That's in ruin. But that signifies my relationship with the Lord. Israel's relationship with the Lord. So they focus on that one thing that is very important. Right? So they focus on the first priority, building the house of the Lord. You know, especially again for BBF, for Bangalore Bible Fellowship, it's a small fellowship. There are lessons from this. And I want us to look at those lessons. Was look at those, some of those lessons. I see basically three major things that we should be careful about, or we should be looking at, right? When we are building the house of the Lord as our response to the new beginning that He has given us. Three things. First is begin with the Lord. Verse 2 of what we just now read. What does it say? What did they build first? They go and build the altar first. What does the altar signify? The altar signifies sacrifice. The altar signifies worship. The altar signifies their communion with the Lord. So they begin with the Lord. And they don't give excuses. They don't give excuses saying that, hey, look, I walked for 4 months. I need rest. I've just come to a new place. I need to build my home. I need to get set up my livelihood. They don't do that. They don't have excuses. They get together and say, hey, look, this is the first priority. We have to begin with God. And we have to build the altar. We actually see this in the lives of others too. Abraham, wherever he went, the first thing he does is he builds the altar. And he sacrifices, he worships God. Right? How about us? What is our first priority? Where are we in building the house of the Lord? It's very, very relevant question for BBF today, Bangalore Bible Fellowship today, as we go through trials and tribulations. Right. Where are we with putting God first? And, or are we giving a lot of other things priority? Because you see, the altar, which was the physical thing in the Old Testament, is not a physical thing here. This is not the house of the Lord. This is a place where the house of the Lord comes to worship the Lord. These four walls have got no other meaning. We are the church. Are we focusing on building up the church first? Are we putting our first priority on building up this church, this congregation that God has called us for? The question that I want us to, you know, it is a very small step. Building the altar is a very small step. But then, from small beginnings, you know, comes large things. From small beginnings, come large things. I work for IBM, and it's one of the biggest IT conglomerates in the world today. 425,000 employees, 179 countries operation, right?
They crossed 100 billion revenue this year. But what did they begin? They began in 1911. We just celebrated our centenary this year. Began as a very small company called CTR, Computing, Tabulating, Recording Company, who used to make these punch card calculators. Right? With 5 to 10 people. This is small beginnings, but where it can go, we have vision and things like that. So BBF today is a small congregation, but with the right focus, with Lord's help, can we make it into a place where people feel that we can commune with God? Is the question that I want us to ask this morning. Can this small congregation become a beacon of hope for others? Right. The second thing in building the house of the Lord, what we see is obedience. Obedience, right? Why did they build the altar? We know that they built the altar by now, right? Why did they build the altar? The answer is in verse 2. And verse 4, verse 2, what does it say? Why did it build the altar? Yes, and because it is written in the law of Moses, right? We built the altar so that we can sacrifice because it was written in the, right? Why did we give free will offerings? Verse 4. Sorry, why did they offer burnt offerings? Why did they continuously offer burnt offerings? As it is written, the word says. Right. They were obeying. They were obeying the word of the Lord. They were obeying the word of the Lord. Right. In verse 10 again, it says that the priests and the Levites, they started praising Lord with cymbals and with musical instruments, etc., etc., as prescribed by David, king of Israel. They were obeying. They were obeying the men of God. They were obeying the laws that were set before them by God. So if building the house of the Lord, obedience is important. How about us? How much do we obey the Lord and His word when we start building? When we start building up the house of the Lord. The third thing that we see, when we look at building the house of the Lord, as the people, the exiles in return did, is that they gave their resources. They gave their resources. Right? It starts from Ezra 2:68, where it says a lot of people gave, free will offerings to build the house. Even before it started, even before they laid the altar, even before they made the altar, even before they laid the foundation of the stone, they already started giving. The law required to give them much, but the fact is that they have given more than what the law required to give. Right? And, we read in 3:5 and 3:7 that 3:7 says It says they gave money to the masons and the carpenters and gave food and drink and oil to the people of Sidon and Tyre so that they would bring cedar logs by sea, etc., etc. So they gave, in addition to the free will offering, that money, they also gave a lot of other things. And of course, we know that they gave a lot of their time. Now, a few people who are part of BBF, are we willing to do that? Are we willing to give up our resources to build this house of the Lord? Are we willing to give our resources to build this congregation up? How committed are we? How committed are we? So these are the three things that I believe are important for building the house of the Lord. And I would like us to look at this and think about it in the context of Bangalore Bible Fellowship and see what we could do. Let me also draw attention to the response of the people there's a momentous act of laying the foundations of the temple, right? Let me draw attention to that.
Verses 10 and 11, I think.
Yes. Right?
10, 11 and 12.
11 says, with praise and thanksgiving they sang to the Lord, He is good, His love to Israel endures forever. And all the people gave a great shout of praise to the Lord because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. People shouted with joy when the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. They were happy that the temple was being rebuilt. Right? That's one set. But we also see another side. Verse 12 says, there were people, and historically we can always prove that people who saw actually Solomon's original temple could have been living at that time when the exiles came. It was about 59 to 70 years. So it's possible that people who have seen the original temple in all its glory are still there. And they, what do? They weep. They weep. Now, some of the new transliterations, like the Message Bible, for example, says that they wept for joy. But many of the older commentators, like Matthew Henry, for example, he says these people wept because they started comparing the old temple to what is to come. And they knew that the new temple can never match the glory of the old temple. They wept because of the disproportionateness between the new temple which is coming up and the old one that they have seen. They were looking at the old one and comparing that this one is not good enough. This is too small. How I wish we had the glory of the old one. Yay, members of BBF. Which category are we in? Which category are we in? I know that some of us might have probably been brought up in mega churches, right? Been brought up in solid churches with liturgy, with everything, with large number of members, with lot of money and fun and things like that. So when we look at BBF, what do we see? Do we see a small beginning? Or give a shout of joy, or do we start comparing it with the other mega churches and say, hey, this is too small. This is not glorious enough. Which category do we belong to? You know, are we lamenting because small beginning is not good enough? Now, we also know that actually if you go through the history of this exile, after exile, we know that they give up at times. Right? They start building the thing. All thing is good at the beginning. But then they start getting discouraged. They start getting afraid. And they stop the work. And of course, that is when God sends people like Haggai and Zechariah and encourage them. And Haggai comes and even asks them, look, how can you live in your paneled houses when the house of the Lord is in ruin? Do this. Right. And I know at least one person in this church who has been touched by that very verse. So it's not easy. Building the house of the Lord is not easy. There will be hurdles. There will be discouragement. There will be failures. There will be people who walk out. There will be people who say, hey, look, this is not for me. I would rather prefer a mega church and go there. But what's our response? Are we willing to be encouraged by the Lord who has given us a new beginning and consider this as a new beginning? Now that's the reason why I chose the book of Ezra to preach today. Because the book of Ezra introduces a different chapter in the Israel history. If you look at the history before the book of Ezra, we will see Israel as a nation which fights its enemies. They are warring against them. Right? That's how it is. And probably this is the first time where we see signs of this nation becoming a church, a praying congregation. This is a change in them. And of course, remember they have to do this with the permission of non-believing kings. People like King Cyrus and King Xerxes and others. Right? They can't do it by themselves. They don't have the authority, of government. They have to do it by authority, by the permission given by the non-believing kings. And that's the situation today in many countries. That's the situation today for us. Right? We spoke about BJP, we spoke about the RSS, we spoke about the persecution that the church is going. That's what it is today. So we are in a way very similar situation that we are in. Because Ezra leads up to the greatest miracle, the mightiest new beginnings of all. Ezra leads up to that. Right. The previous instances were all new beginnings or all history. But the new beginning that Jesus gave is something that we live today. We are part of it. We are part of that new beginning. If anyone is in Jesus Christ, he is a new creation. If anyone is in Jesus Christ, he is a new creation. And it's not history. It's present. It's present, and it is a new beginning that God gave through two human impossibilities. Two human impossibilities. The virgin's womb and the empty tomb. That's the new beginning that we live in today. Right? Two human impossibilities. And this is a new beginning which comes with promise attached with it. Isaiah says, right, forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. See, I am doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the desert and stream in the wasteland. This is the promise of the new beginning that we are in today. This is what we have been called to, right? And Jesus Christ confirms that promise. Because Jesus Christ says, I am making everything new. I am making everything new. I am the Alpha and the Omega. I am the beginning and the end. This is really the new beginning for us. This is really the new church for us. What's the new church that we are looking at? What's the model of the new church that we are looking at? The verse that touched me is this. The new church that we should be looking at. The people who have come out of the great tribulation, they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of the God and serve Him day and night in His temple. And He who sits on the throne will spread His tent over them. Never again will they hunger, never again will they thirst. The sun will not beat upon them, nor any scorching heat, nor for the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. He will lead them to springs of living water, and God will wipe every tear from their eyes. God will wipe away every tear. This is the model of the new church that we are looking at. This is the model of the new church where we will worship the King, we will worship the Lord for all the time, because we don't have any other priorities. We don't need to hunger. We don't need to thirst. We don't need to work. We don't need to earn our living. We don't need to be in pain. We are not hurt. The new church that we are looking at. And that is the promise of the new beginning that God has set before us. So, let's pray that God will take this small congregation, Bangalore Bible Fellowship, and make it into modern church. With His help we can, right? Jesus says, nothing is impossible. Nothing is impossible. I will leave you with a visual, and I will request Pastor to come after the visual to come and give us the benediction and closing prayer. Thank you.